From KUAR News in Little Rock, this is a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. Coming up.
Funding for the governor's Medicaid plan is at an impasse, but he might have a way around it.
If funding the health care plan for low-income Arkansans is not renewed, state leaders are looking at how they'll deal with the cuts.
The Arkansas Board of Education takes action on a number of issues, including new math standards.
The state's jobless rate dips to its lowest levels in history.
Looking back at the life of a longtime Arkansas congressman who played a key role in ending Richard Nixon's presidency.
For the week ending Friday, April 15th, 2016, this is KUAR's Week in Review podcast. I'm Michael Heplin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotajek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
That's all just ahead. Well, Arkansas lawmakers are taking a long weekend after hitting a budget standoff over the state's hybrid Medicaid expansion. Jacob, this week a fiscal session of the Arkansas legislature began, and the top item up for consideration. Lawmakers said we shouldn't talk about anything else until we resolve Arkansas Works.
So this Medicaid expansion vote got through committee as expected. As expected, the toughest challenge was in the state Senate, where they needed a 3/4 vote in order to pass this funding for the Medicaid program, which includes Arkansas Works. The vote was 25-10. Just 10 Republicans managed to block bipartisan majorities in both the Democratic and Republican Party. And keep in mind that this Medicaid budget also includes every other Medicaid program, like AR Kids, Services for the Disabled, and Long-Term Care. Here is Lieutenant Governor Tim Griffin reading the vote counts.
Cast up the ballot, 25 yeas, 10 nays. The bill is not adopted.
So we're at that impasse. It was sort of expected that they wouldn't get the two votes to flip that they needed. And we're especially at this impasse because Democrats, as you mentioned in your initial question, they resolved that they have to resolve this first before anything else. And after this happened, in fact, as expected, in the House, a customary bill that would authorize funds for the state auditor's office. Democrats blocked that. They said, we're not going to vote on this. Medicaid has to be resolved first. So here's Minority Leader Michael John Gray in the House. This is on the first day of the fiscal session. He was referencing a letter he sent to lawmakers, and it ended up playing out in the coming days.
I think what Arkansas Democrats today said is, let's stand up and do our job. Once again, that letter does not say Arkansas Democrats demand passage of this appropriation. What it said is, we do not think it's prudent or responsible to take a vote on any budget before we take a vote on that one.
But opponents in the state Senate, though, like Senator Brian King, he's about as hardline as they can come, opposed to this program. He's, of course, not swayed by this. He probably actually prefers the process to be held up. He also doesn't want anything resolved before the Medicaid budget. He's also, though, in the extreme minority party. Even in his own party, majority Republicans do want Arkansas Works. But here's some of King's comments after this 25-10 vote. I caught up with him just afterward, and it really shows how strained relationships are becoming within that party.
You know, I just vote myself, and I don't see myself voting for it. This thing the governor is trying to do shamefully, and make it seem like you don't care about foster kids and you don't knit deals. And that's despicable.
So Brian King saying despicable, that's not really a gray word. It's pretty black and white how he feels about the governor's office. We'll get into some of those alternative cuts that he was referencing with Chris later, I believe. But so basically we have two options. We're at this impasse. One is you have to try to peel away those two votes in the state Senate to get that 3/4 majority. You could either do that by offering deals to some state lawmakers. In the past, they've offered deals to get Jane English to redevelop the Department of Workforce Services in exchange for her vote. You could do it by punishing particular districts or legislators. The governor's highlighted that a lot of cuts come from some of these, are in districts of these state legislators who are opposed to it. You could threaten them saying, you're never going to get another bill passed again, Bart Hester, unless you switch on this. Or you could just appeal to their reason saying, look at the votes. You just don't have a vote to do anything else. So those are options number one, is to try to literally get more votes. Option number two is a little bit more complicated. On Arkansas Week, we talked about it, and we kind of named it the weird trick that the governor has. So this is the weird trick, so get ready for it. It's kind of complicated procedural strategy here being pushed by the governor's office. So now that this bill is back in the Joint Budget Committee, theoretically they could insert special language that would remove the Arkansas Works funding from the rest of the Medicaid. So just be everything in Medicaid except for Arkansas Works. So theoretically then it would have the votes to pass because the 10 opponents would say, good, this is what we wanted, to get rid of Arkansas Works from the Medicaid budget. But then if it passed, the governor could issue a line item veto. And in this line item veto, he could say, I veto your special language that removes the Arkansas Works funding, which would in effect put the funding back in place. And since it takes a majority to override any veto, those 10 in the minority would never get the majority to override it. So it's kind of a weird bargain, and it's never really been done before. And there are benefits to both sides, supposedly. They tried this in joint budget, though. It was split 22 to 22. None of the Democrat, or only one of the Democrats, got on board. Because the optics of it is they would have to vote for an amendment that ends the program that they want to keep, hoping that the governor would then fulfill his promise later. Here's Senate President Jonathan Dismaying. He kind of made the case for both sides why he thinks it's advantageous to vote for this amendment.
You know, for the folks that are supportive of the program, there's a trust and an understanding from the governor's office. For those that are opposed to the program, you know, this is a path for them to vote on the appropriation in exactly the form that they wanted to see it presented in. And the reality is you have a problem if you're opposed to the program because you are in a minority that inside, you know, both caucuses and also inside the chambers. I think the majority has the right to look at what tools they have, utilize those tools. And again, it goes back to trust.
But Brian King, of course, he knows that this is a ploy, that they're not really trying to get rid of funding. He knows it's a ploy to get the program passed in the end, even though it gives him an out, so to speak, by saying, well, at least I voted to end it. The governor pulled some trick in the end. But here's Brian King. He's not buying it.
I tell you what, man, I don't know that professional wrestlers try and script out anything any better.
So that's Brian King. And here's the budget chair, Larry Teague, who's a Democrat. It's kind of interesting. A Democrat is in charge of the most powerful committee in the Republican-controlled government. He says it's not a scheme. They're just using the rules.
I don't agree that it's dishonest. It is using the full extent of rules, and I don't find that to be dishonest.
So it may not be dishonest, it may be within the rules, but it's certainly something that is new or sort of unprecedented. And I talked to Larry Teague in between the Senate vote on his way down to the stairs where they were about to try this in joint budget.
Are you familiar with this predicted tactic, at least ever playing out before?
Uh-uh. You had to be fairly creative to get this done.
You think you're that creative?
It's not me, I'm just a poor old country insurance agent.
So that's humble Larry Teague. It's sort of a mouthful, but it's basically the same story as it's been for the past several years, is that there's a minority of the Republican Party that's trying to block health insurance for over 250,000 people because it's tied to the Affordable Care Act, and they don't like that.
Well, there's kind of a principle matter here. It lets opponents of the Medicaid expansion vote against it if they follow Governor Hutchinson's, I don't know if scheme is a polite way to put it, but at the same time, you also had Democrats like Joyce Elliott, who said, while I like something that can make this Medicaid expansion continue, she said she couldn't actually vote for something that would end the Medicaid expansion, even if the way it would eventually be finagled would allow it to be continued. She couldn't go back to her constituents and say, yes, I voted against this.
In some of this, I think state legislators are maybe a bit obsessed with their own titles. I think that come November, most people who are voting don't pay attention to how their state legislators voted, number one. And number two, it's a very complicated process. And in the end, if the program gets passed, you could take credit for it. In the end, Bart Hester, he could say, well, I voted for an amendment to strip the funding. But most of the political pressure in the end will come on the governor on this. And I think people realize that and appreciate that he's doing that if you're a supporter of this. Because the worst case scenario, you could say, well, the Republican state legislator voted to end Obamacare in Arkansas, and then the governor pulled a trick to keep it.
Yeah. So what's happening this weekend? What was the mentality behind saying on Thursday, okay, let's just take a long weekend and not come back until Tuesday?
I think part of the mentality, because of the Democrats' vote where they refused a basic kind of opening traditional bill, is that nothing's going to get done until they figure out this Medicaid thing, so they're going to go back and recess. Hopefully the Democrats who are concerned about the special language will get some more time to be reassured by the governor's office and be apprised of the plan a little bit beforehand. Apparently some of them didn't learn about it except for reading through the Arkansas Times that this plan was even going on. And on the other hand, the governor's made a few specific comments about state legislators saying, specifying different cuts in their districts, saying that these are the cuts that are going to happen in your district because of your vote. So maybe they'll be talking to county judges and county sheriffs and things like that, trying to get them to pressure them during the weekend.
Well, Chris, there are a lot of state leaders, agency heads, and others who are looking at the possibility of, if this doesn't pass, what will actually happen to their budgets. Big cuts are expected.
Yeah, well, in Governor Asa Hutchinson's budget for the $5.3 billion in state funds that will be distributed if Arkansas Works passes, he includes some, you know, modest increases in funding to, you know, areas like education, DHS, Division of Children and Family Services for foster care. But this week, a couple of House leaders, Jeremy Gillum, the House Speaker, Republican from Judsonia, and Lane Jean, another state representative who's on the Joint Budget Committee, presented an alternative budget, a contingency budget, if kind of showing the different areas that could be cut if Arkansas Works is not passed. And I kind of talked to a couple of agency heads who might face cuts if Arkansas Works is not passed. For instance, UAMS, in the governor's budget, UAMS funding is kept flat at about $100 million. But with the possibility that Arkansas Works is not passed, basically uncompensated care costs would go up dramatically for UAMS. A lot of their services go towards low-income patients. And I spoke with Dan Ron. He's the chancellor of UAMS, and here he is talking a little bit about that.
75% of our budget that supports all activities comes from patient care. So patient care cross-subsidizes education, research, and everything else. We've done an analysis to understand what the impact would be were Arkansas Works not to be approved, and determined that we would have a $65 million hole in the budget in comparison with where we stand right now. That's a really big number. We can't deal with that just by limiting our services to patients, because the majority of the care that we provide is urgent or emergent, and so we would still incur that cost. And that means in order to address the shortfall, we would have to cut academic and research programs in a major, major way. And so we're going through the exercise trying to figure out how we would do that were it required, but it would change absolutely everything about UAMS.
Now, the House leader's alternative budget that they propose actually does increase a little bit of funding for UAMS if Arkansas Works doesn't pass, to account for some of that uncompensated care costs that the hospital would have to absorb. But Ron also kind of makes the point that UAMS may be underfunded. He makes the comparison that other regional state institutions, state medical hospitals, get a larger share of their funding from the state. UAMS only gets about 6% by comparison, and Mississippi's state medical institution gets about twice as much money from the state that UAMS does. And UAMS is also dealing with some expenses that will probably lead to a shortfall next fiscal year, despite whether or not Arkansas Works is passed. But I also spoke with the director, deputy director at the Department of Community Correction, Dinah Tyler. Now, the community correction oversees some 54,000 parolees and probationers in the state. They could face a 3% cut in their funding under the alternative budget proposed by the House leaders. And Dinah Tyler says basically that would mean, or that would go towards potentially staffing reductions.
What it's really going to mean for us is an impact on people. We'll have to hold positions open and not fill them. And we could even at some point have to cut positions, including our officer positions. And that's especially troubling because our parole and probation officers already have average caseloads greater than 2 times the national average. So if we cut the number of officers we have trying to supervise 54,000 offenders, then we're going to see those caseloads jump even higher. And they're already dangerously high.
Now, parole officers help, you know, parolees reenter into society and transition, find a job, whatever. And as we know, a lot of parole and violations and absconding issues that we've seen in the state have led to changes in the parole system, which have led to more ex-offenders going back to prison, which has led to prison overcrowding, which is kind of this continual cycle of costs that the state has to absorb. So, you know, Tyler says that their agency is always looking for grant money and things, ways to fund their department outside of just pure state funding, but obviously a serious issue for them. Other cuts could possibly come to county aid. The state gives about $21 million in turnback funds to counties each year. I spoke with somebody with the Arkansas Association of Counties, and he said that, you know, basically rural counties would get most of the hit because a large portion of their budgets, especially towards public safety like the sheriff's offices and the county jails, does come from the state. So those are just some examples. You know, in the alternative budget, general education would get a funding reduction. Prison funding would remain flat. The governor had suggested a modest increase to, you know, funding for prisons under his budget with Arkansas Works. So those are just some examples.
Did any of these agency heads talk about whether or not they're doing anything to lobby lawmakers or anyone about the cuts?
Well, certainly they're all following the events pretty closely. And, you know, you'll certainly see different agency heads in the legislature. I think that it remains to be seen whether or not they're effective or not. I don't know whether or not they've been in personal conversations with legislators or the minority of legislators on the Republican side who are opposed to this Arkansas Works plan. But we'll see. Certainly, I guess if things get more dire, then, you know, it's likely you would see some of that. Yeah, sure.
And Jacob, any indication when lawmakers come back, how quickly there could be some kind of action taken or inaction or something decided?
I think everyone's trying to manage expectations. You know, they don't want to promise something's going to happen on Tuesday and then it not happen and say that they had a loss, so to speak. But it looks like this amendment that they wanted to do, this line item veto runaround sort of thing, there's been 2 of the 10 state senators who opposed the Medicaid expansion said that they could vote for that line item veto runaround. So that'd be enough already to get it over, even if the Democrats didn't support it, at least in that committee. Then the Democrats in the Senate would have to support it in the end, though. But, it could all happen on Tuesday.
Okay, we'll see.
What do you think that it might look like in the future if this method were used again on other pieces of legislation?
Yeah, that's the big debate, because if that's the new normal, that's an extraordinary sort of hurdle to set for every single kind of issue that comes up like this. On the other hand, there aren't a lot of issues that's driven the legislature to the brink. It's mostly been this Medicaid expansion issue over and over again. But, I mean, backers of this, the governor's office, they might hopefully say, look, we can do this every time if you're going to try to do this hold up for the three-quarters majority. So it might be a permanent way around it as well. It might be the end-all of this.
Sarah, a couple of key items took place this week in education in Arkansas. In particular, the Board of Education adopted new math standards for K through 12 that will take effect this fall. And we also had a school district, another one declared in fiscal distress, and that enables the state to kind of step in.
Yeah, so the thing about these math standards is that they're not exactly that new. They're not that different than what was in place before with the Common Core new standards that the state has been sort of grappling with. And since the governor recommended keeping Common Core last year, a group of teachers got together from around the state and started reviewing the standards. The governor's task force had said, you know, we think you should keep Common Core, but make an Arkansas-specific recommendation. And it seems like some of the biggest issues they were dealing with was just that teachers were interpreting those standards differently in different places. So in the end, having talked to Stacy Smith from the Arkansas Department of Education, it doesn't sound like there's too much of a change from the original interpretation of the Common Core standards in the state, but teachers are getting some more clarification about what that really means.
A lot of the conversations that teachers had as far as hashing out the standards was people interpreting individual standards to mean something different, or the end result of what a student was supposed to do. For example, I'm trying to think of an example to share with you. When a kindergarten skill of asking students to count and record a number of objects less than 10, some school districts were actually scoring that on if the student wrote the number correctly. And the skill was really based on one-to-one correspondence and could a student do that skill, not whether or not they could write a 3 forward or backwards. And so you had some places who were counting that as not a mastered skill, where you had other places who were counting it as a mastered skill. And so really going through the standards and talking about each one and making sure that everyone at the table understood exactly what it was meant to say or to intended for teachers to teach. Within the new document, you will actually see something called teacher notes throughout the whole document. And that is there to support teachers making sure that everybody's kind of on the same page. When you got into the high school courses, you'll see some more geometry skills added in within the geometry courses based on a new assessment system. The actual high school courses will be taken to the board next month. Today, it was getting the K-12 standards adopted, and then we'll build the high school courses and bring them back next month.
And we still have standards that are being worked out in other areas?
Yeah, the literacy standards are the other part that they're working on. And when the task force was meeting to review Common Core, the goal of Common Core is to make education more rigorous and help students prepare for the realities of the modern workplace better, and also to put states on the same page with both testing and expectations. And one of the difficulties about the math standards some people had was that it was more comprehension based and less about memorizing certain steps without needing to first understand, you know, why. Some people thought that might be too advanced for some kids, but it sounds like the Arkansas teachers that did the review pretty much stuck with what Common Core had presented that they initially took.
And then finally on education, we had a school district, one that's long been troubled, Dollarway, that declared in fiscal distress.
Yeah, so actually I was saying that's the one thing, like, of all the things that happened this week that I'm, like, least informed about. But there's a few other things I could mention in education that happened in the state board I think are of interest today. Little Rock School District Superintendent Baker Curris gave an update on performance, particularly of some of the schools in distress that had been taken over by the state, and their state given grade levels have improved somewhat significantly for several of them. That is not the criteria used to decide whether to take over a school. It's testing. So the grades actually take into consideration economic factors and demographics and things. And then Superintendent Baker Curris, this is more of local relevance, but he mentioned a new security plan for the local schools that actually involves cutting security officers but investing more in cameras. So I wonder if this is part of a strategy to strengthen the image of the Little Rock School District after the ruling about charter expansion. That said, in effect, he's actually decreasing the staff size of the security force. So it's a little unclear if that's going to be a benefit.
I just want to say something about the Dollarway School District in Jefferson County. It's, I think part of it is in Pine Bluff, if not all of it at least. They were previously in academic distress, found to be by the state board. This time they're deemed to be in fiscal distress. I saw one quote from Johnny Key where he said it's one of the worst examples, at least in the state right now, at least of fiscal distress that he's seen. So that district, it looks like they've had a past of running afoul of the State Board of Education, and looks like they're once again at least be going into them a little bit more. I just want to say something about the cameras. When I went to Parkview High School in Little Rock, They installed a camera, I think, in the mid-2000s, and someone protested by spray-painting the Imperial symbol from Star Wars underneath of it.
I think maybe I read this about the Delaware School District, maybe on the Arkansas Times blog, but they had quoted Key saying that a consideration should be the socioeconomic sort of context of a distress category, and that seemed to contradict some of the rulings about the Little Rock schools, particularly when it came to considering charter schools. So seems to be that the department might have to answer to whether or not they're going to apply those standards the same way.
Chris, we got new numbers this week of the jobless rate in Arkansas for March, and it fell to a record all-time low, at least as long as records have been kept in Arkansas.
Yeah, the unemployment rate for March was recorded as 4.0%. That beats the previous record low that was tied in last February at 4.2%. Before that record low, we last saw it in, I believe, the year 2000. It was the last time 4.2% was recorded. But this March 4.0% is certainly positive news on all fronts. I turn to Kathy Deck, who's an economist with the University of Arkansas up in Fayetteville, for some analysis.
Both at the state and national level, we're seeing labor force growth. So that means, of course, that we're seeing that kind of labor force participation rate go up as people who want work are able to find it. And even the long-term unemployment problem is abating somewhat. And so the unemployment rate in Arkansas fell for all the right reasons.
Yeah, so as she notes there, the civilian labor force in March grew, as well as total employment. For a long period of time after the recession, we had seen unemployment drop, but the civilian labor force also drop, which was kind of a worrying trend for many economists. But March of this year, the civilian labor force grew by 34,000 people compared to the same month last year, and it grew, the number of people employed grew by some 52,000 compared to the same period last year in March. Pretty much all sectors of the economy grew, business and professional services, leisure and hospitality. The only sector that continued its decline, and it's been a long decline for probably the last 20 years, but over the last year has been steadily declining, that's manufacturing. And here's Deck talking a little bit about that.
It's just a sector that is beset by a couple of different things. First of all, manufacturing has just seen just massive productivity explosions, which means that we just don't need as many people to produce as much stuff. So we continue to see year after year that the value of what we produce goes up and up, even as manufacturing employment goes down. The other thing, of course, is a workforce perspective. We hear again and again from our manufacturers that they have a very, very difficult time recruiting qualified people to work in manufacturing. And so I think by necessity, they learn to do more with less.
So it'll be interesting to see if ever the manufacturing sector recovers in Arkansas or around the nation. But there you have it, all-time low. It'll be interesting to see if it continues to drop. So,
well, a long-time titan of Arkansas politics passed away this week. Congressman Ray Thornton died at the age of 87 on Wednesday. He was in hospice care for lung cancer in Little Rock. I covered him quite a bit in the mid-90s when he represented the 2nd District. He also spent, I believe, 3 terms representing the 4th District during the 1970s. Chris, you dug into his career, and he, in particular, played a key role serving on the House Judiciary Committee during the Watergate scandal.
Yeah, Thornton was kind of unique among politicians, especially from Arkansas, in that he basically served in 3 branches of government. He started out as state attorney general in 1970. He was later elected to the 4th District in that congressional role. Later on in his career, after serving the 2nd District in Congress, he was elected to the Arkansas Supreme Court. But yes, he did certainly play a key role in what were then impeachment proceedings against sitting President Richard Nixon, who, you know, as we all know, was facing the Watergate scandal, and I won't go into all the details of that. But Thornton was a key member of the House Judiciary Committee and helped draw up articles of impeachment for obstruction of justice, abuse of power, contempt of Congress, and really prompted the resignation of the president. I mind a little archived video from a panel discussion that he was a part of in 1994, I guess around the 20th anniversary of the president's resignation. And here he is kind of talking about his decision and kind of the unpopularity of his decision in his home district, which was largely supportive of the president at the time.
I thought that this was a circumstance in which my duty was to the whole country rather than to reflect the 70% majority of my district, which had supported the president, and which after I cast this vote, I went to Kirby, Arkansas, Ernie Dunlap's store, a little country town with a bench out in front where all of the farmers come in and gather and solve all the problems of the world. I loved going there. They were so warm to me as their representative. And a few days after the event, I drove down there, pulled up across the street, walked across the street to greet them. Every one of them stood up and walked away without saying a word. And I asked Ernie, I said, Ernie, what in the world is wrong? He said they didn't like your vote to impeach the president. So it was a little bit of a trauma. But the main thing was that I saw our role as being in the position of being the safety valve as to whether this free government would continue to exist.
Now, that audio was recorded from a panel discussion in 1994 held by the National Press Club and the Discovery Channel based around a book that had just come out on the Watergate scandal. But Thornton went on to serve in Congress for three terms in the 70s. He ran unsuccessfully for a Senate seat vacated by longtime Senator John McClellan. He lost to Jim Guy Tucker and David Pryor in the primary.
And they're all like one percentage point away from each other.
Yeah, it was a really close race. He took a break from politics. He served as president of Arkansas State University and then also the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville. Later on in the 90s, as you said, he returned to Congress and served in the 2nd District. He was elected to three terms there, and then upon completion of his last term, served in the Arkansas Supreme Court. So really a varied career from what I can tell, and a lot of commentators noted this. I spoke with Hal Blass. He's a political science professor at Ouachita Baptist University, just about kind of his legislative style, Thornton's legislative style, or his kind of political outlook.
He was a person who was adept at building bridges and pulling people together. He was a Southern Democrat, and that put him in a position where, in a partisan sense, he was connected with the Democratic Party, but ideologically, he was more in the middle or even leaning moderately toward the conservative side.
And there gives you a sense of his political disposition. I also spoke with Ernie Dumas, who's a longtime veteran journalist and political columnist. He seemed to remember that Thornton was held environmental issues to be really important to him. He, for instance, he served on a committee on science and technology in both his term in the 70s and also again in the 90s, so he's influential in those areas. And he died at the age of 87 this week.
And Jacob, we had quite a reaction at the, from political leaders in the state, but also anything, you were at the Capitol that day, any response there?
Yeah, you had all the state's congressional leaders issue statements. I believe Senator Cotton gave some remarks on the U.S. Senate floor, just generally praising him as being someone that Arkansans can get behind, that I don't know that they agree with specific points of his legacy or his policies or anything like that. On the House floor, the
Republican Minority Leader Ken Bragg held a moment of silence. I believe Tim Griffin made some brief remarks as well on the Senate floor.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up this week's Look at Arkansas News, Politics, and More. I'm Michael Heblin.
I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Sarah Weitz-Kotichek.
I'm Chris Hickey.
KUAR is a listener-supported service at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. Important to say listener-supported as we wrap up our spring pledge drive this week. We're also editorially independent here of the university. We welcome your comments. Write to news@kuar.org. Our theme song is by our own Chris Hickey. You can subscribe to the podcast if you're not already a subscriber at iTunes. Thanks for listening.